A little more than two centuries ago, a couple of thousand miles to the east, in the city of Prague, which at the time was one of the centers of Jewish life and of Limud Torah and of rabbinic leadership in Central Europe. Prague had a tradition of having extraordinary Talmid Chachamim as Shtat Rabbanim, as the Rav of the town. In an earlier era, it had been the Maral of Prague. But we're reaching back late 1700s, early 1800s, to the lifetime of Rabbi Cheskel Landau, who we know as the Noda Yehuda, or maybe some of you know as the Tzlach. And he was a brilliant Talmid Chacham, who probably revolutionized the whole art of writing tshuvas. On the Gedolei Achronim, and a man who was extraordinarily attuned to people and apparently had a wicked sense of humor. There are whole rafts of tshuvas that have been written about particular lines in Ned Yehuda. Was he serious? Was he joking? Nafkamina lahalacha? Maybe we'll get to that at some point. Ned Yehuda was a rav of a very large city, a very big, large community, and large community means large diversity of people. And he read through the tshuvas, he handled a wide, wide array of shilas. The good, the bad, and the ugly. But probably one of the most bizarre situations that he encountered as a rav is the following. I apologize to some of you who have heard this in the past, but you'll see where it'll take us. Two Jews walk into Noda Yehuda's office. One is dressed like a wealthy businessman, other one is dressed like a wagon driver. And they're hammer and tongs. They're fighting, arguing at each other's throats. What's the issue? He gets them to calm down, he gets them to focus. And the fellow dressed as the wagon driver speaks first. And he says, I know I look like a wagon driver, but he, pointing to the fellow dressed like the successful merchant, I hired him as my wagon driver to take me to Prague, come to Prague on business. So I hired this fellow to drive me to Prague. This was Uber of, you know, late 1700s. But there was no tracking. So he said it was a several days journey to Prague. And one night at knife point, he forced me to switch clothing with him, and he forced me to switch essentially identities with him. And he made me give him my clothing, and he made me dress in his clothing. He made me drive him in the wagon all the way to Prague. And he stole all my money. I was bringing a lot of cash because I was intending to make investments in Prague. And I want justice. He's a ganav. I want justice. Maybe he looks at the other fellow and says, that's a pretty serious allegation. What do you say? The fellow dressed like the merchant says, Rabbi, I've been walking around Prague the last few days. This fellow has been like following me around, claiming that I'm him and he's me and I stole everything. I don't know who he is. I don't know what he is. Clearly he needs help. I'm not equipped to give him that help, but just save me from this. That's a shiloh. That's a shiloh. And if he starts going back and forth, asking, cross-examining, looking them straight in the eyes, and neither one cracks. Each one sticks to his story. The one dressed as a merchant insists that he is who he is, and this wagon driver is just someone who, unfortunate fellow who's been following him around, and the fellow dressed as a wagon driver says, no, he's a merchant, and the other one is a guy. Back and forth and back and forth, 5, 10, 15 minutes, and everyone sticks to his story. And you just stop and think. On both sides, difficult shiloh. I'll have an answer for you tomorrow morning at 9. Be in my office tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock. We'll work it out. The fellow dressed as a merchant is, you know, muttering under the breath, another day of work lost, but it is what it is. They leave, they go to their separate place, they come back next morning. Next morning after Shabbos, Ned Yehuda has an office, and there's a waiting room in front, and the waiting room was full of people who came to speak to Rav. And one by one, you know, people go in, they come out, You have to know that yes, the day before, after they had, immediately after they left, and Yehuda called in his gabbai, called in the secretary, and he said, "You saw those two fellas? Special instructions. When they come back, they're going to be back here tomorrow morning. Under no circumstances, you let them into my study. I will admit them when I'm ready. Come what may, they don't walk in until I invite them." Gabbai says, "Okay." Next morning comes, that was there. These two fellows together with the rest of the crowd that could come to speak to the Yehuda. Slowly, one by one, people are getting called in and leaving, getting called in and leaving. And the crowd is shrinking and thinking, you know, the turn is coming soon. And everyone else is being called but them. I'm not really sure how the line works here. And finally, there are only three people left. And then the daughter comes down and calls the others. Okay. They're alone, but obviously they're next. Fellow spends a couple minutes on Yehuda, discussing what he needs to discuss. Leaves. They're ready to go. Yehuda says, "The Rav said to call you when he's ready." Okay. Waiting. Half hour goes by, 45 minutes go by.
God, I can't wait here all day. I gotta get on with it. I can't get on with
life. The Rav said, "He'll call you when he's ready."
Waiting, an hour goes by, hour 15 minutes goes by,
the merchant pulls out the equivalent coin out 20, I'm not sure what the Czechoslovakian money was at the time, pulls out a 100 kroner bill, or a 1,000 zloty bill, I'm not sure what it was. The guy says, "I'm sorry, we don't do business like that here. The rebel will call you, money's not going to help you, the rebel will call you when he's ready."
10:30, 11 o'clock, you imagine, right, these two fellows, they hate each other's guts.
They're the only ones in the room. They're already stressed because they're and then they're alone with each other. It's, the tension is getting so thick you can cut it with a knife. He tries to up the price, pay the guy and mark out of it. Absolutely not. The rebel play right now. 11:15, 11:30. They're waiting for 2.5 hours. 11:45. Almost 3 hours. And now, and then Yehuda, the door between the waiting where they're sitting and then Yehuda's study opens just a crack. And they can hear and then Yehuda. And they hear that he is learning with a niggun. And he is singing and learning. And they're like, "You can learn afterwards. What are you thinking of waiting for?" And the door is just sort of like casually, nonchalantly ajar. And then Yehuda sounds like he's just casually, nonchalantly learning. And meanwhile, they're at wit's end. Another 15 minutes go by. At 12 noon, the door flies open. And Yehuda was a very large man. He was very tall, broad shouldered, big fingers. We know actually from a very famous halachic comment of Yehuda about Shiur. He's a big man. The door flies open. I imagine he must have like filled the frame, the open frame, the doorway. And they both look at him. And he says, "Will the wagon driver please come in?" And instinctively, the fellow dressed as a merchant jumps out of the seat. And then Yehuda says, "I think you just solved the problem." So sometimes, when you peel away all the excess layers, which in this case, Yehuda did with, not with a vegetable peeler, but with psychological acuity. When you peel away all the additional layers, you can figure out what's really going on. It's often hard to know what the facts are. Sometimes it's hard to know who a person is, and that's perhaps a larger conversation at that level. In many shilas, it's hard to know what the facts are.
And how do you, it's not always obvious, how you figure out, not what the din is, but before you even know what the din is, you have to figure out what are the data? What are the facts of the case? That's often not easy to figure out. So we're going to be learning Maseches Bava Kamma this year. A focus in both Ian and Bekiyas on the first 6 prakim. I'm sure you know that the first 10 prakim Maseches Nezikin, which we call Bava Kamma, are about different sorts of loss and damage that one person might cause another. Yechazer the Mishnais, you know that the last 4 prakim are about particular types of Adam HaMazik, through different types of theft, Geneva, Gezela, and in a bar fight, people are hitting each other, Perek HaChovo. And our focus is going to be on the first six prakim. It's almost as though they function almost like two separate masechtas. The first six prakim are incredibly intertwined. And the first six prakim really will focus on some situations of people who cause damage and plain situations of property that causes damage. And Bava Kamma is very practical. And Bava Kamma, we're going to be talking about things like between Ina and Bekias. All those lawyers' ads that you listen to, that you see in the as you drive through Ocean Heights. We may not be talking so much about breaking and entering, but we'll definitely be talking about slip and falls and what happens if you had faulty ski equipment and there was an accident on the slopes. And I bought the equipment, what's the din? I rented the equipment, what's the din? If a bath, hypothetically speaking, there was a bathtub and everyone thought someone else was going to turn it off. And next, in an apartment building, next thing you know, the water is dripping down. So who's on the hook? Who's on the hook for that? A household fire spreads. A campfire spreads. Or other camp antics. I know looking around the room, different people have been in different camps, which have different definitions of what constitutes antics. And sometimes they could cause a loss. Or maybe there was a car accident. A car accident that was caused by a person. A car accident that was caused by an animal that was in the street. Or let's say, hypothetically speaking, I left the window of my bunk open and an animal made its way in and, left a permanent imprint on the materials that are within the bunk. I left a phone next to soup, or put down the soup next to the phone. Either way, they got into not a car crash, but a phone and soup crash usually doesn't end well, at least on one end. The Bava Kamma is intensely practical. Between Ian and Bekias, we will together cover the better part of the first six prakim, and Ritzem will be. I imagine many of you will be mashlim the gaps of the first six prakim by the time graduation rolls around. Certainly by the time next Rosh Chodesh El runs around, you already have the first six prakim mitzvah shem under your belt. You'll have learned it once, twice, three times. And that's the primary focus of Maseches Bava Kamma in particular, is Nezek. And that will certainly be our primary focus over the course of the year. But before we can even get into the specifics of Nezek, the largest question that we're going to get into first, and Bekias, we will get right into Nezek this afternoon. And Ian, for the course of this very brief Elzman, our focus is going to be on that which comes before Nezek. The larger question, it's really in many ways a psicha to all of Nashim Nezikin, is to begin to think about Torah Sasvekas. To begin to think about 95% of halacha is what's the din in this case, what's the din in that case, and is it tameh or tahar or chayev or pater or asr or mutter, you have to pay, you don't have to pay. If that's 95% of halacha, 5% of halacha is, but what do you do when you don't even know what the facts are? If I know what the facts are, then the din is X. The din is Y, it's machlokas, what have you. But before that comes Torah Sasekas. How do you deal with, how do you even figure out what the facts should be? If, in the world of the Beis HaMedrash, if you love Gedolei Achronim, so this is, the Ktzos wrote a very famous sefer, supposedly over Shavuot Brachas. Certainly as a young man, he wrote a sefer, Shev Shmaitza, about these issues. A couple centuries later, in the early 1900s, Rav Shimon Shkup wrote a parallel sefer, Shara Yosher. If you prefer different terminology, you can speak about halachic epistemology. But either way, it's a question of how do we deal with not knowing what the facts are? So some things we know. It's not always like knowing Yehuda. And sometimes you have a shah. Sometimes you have an aid. You have two aid. And sometimes you don't. And then what do? You use statistics. You look at status quo. What are the tools that the halacha gives us? And there are probably at least 10 tools or so that halacha gives us for figuring out what the facts are. Torah Sasvekas is an absolutely fascinating world of halacha. World within halacha. There's no one masechta dedicated to it. So the Shabbos you'll find largely in Shabbos and Erev. And in Nezek you'll find primarily in Bava Kamma. And Chalitza is mostly in the end of Maseches Yevamos. You don't know how to bring carbon minutes, but it's mostly Maseches Menachos.
But Taurus HaSfekas is one of those meta-halachic issues that doesn't have a specific mesechta dedicated to it.
One of the most central sugyas is actually, particularly in the world of Safek in Mammon, is actually the beginning of the fifth parak of Maseches Bava Kamma. So that's going to be our focus in Iyun for the days that we have between now and the Yom Tovim, is to really dig in to the world of Taurus HaSfekas. And Mirtz Hashem, over the course of the year, we're gonna grow and accomplish a lot together. Baruch Hashem, it's very exciting, each and every one of you here. A chabura of Bnei Aliyah will be mechazik each other. And the proper structure is a trellis to enable that. A proper structure in terms of just technical expectations, we'll talk about that later. But right now I want to roll up our sleeves and I want to get right down to business. Let me just throw one question at you. What would you say about the following? This is an easy one. But just to get the juices flowing, right, less dramatic than going to be Huda, let's say, I have here a water bottle. Water bottle is not good enough, it's not good inside. I have, hypothetically speaking, a batch of chocolate chip cookies. Hypothetically speaking. Back in the days of Chazal, kids loved to play with dead mice. I think tastes have changed, although it's been often pointed out that no matter how fancy the toys are, lots of times kids like the packaging more than the toy. So, think about that. But, if you're A, in a house that actually has dead mice in it, I hope that's not the case for any of you, and B, living at a time when little kids are drawn to dead mice, that might still sometimes be the case. It's, ooh, I see some people are smiling and some people are very quizzical. And you walk in, and here's the scene. The kitchen, on the counter, is a tray of cookies. And there's a trail of crumbs. I thought this Rashi tells us the cases. There's a trail of crumbs. And here's a kid, a four-year-old, with an impish grin. And there's a dead mouse in the next room. Are your cookies homemade or tar? The kid touched a dead mouse, then touched the cookies. Dead mouse is a source of tumma. Mouse is one of the Shmona Shratzim. A dead mouse is, by definition, in of itself, Tameh. The child becomes Rishon L'tuma, one degree removed. The cookies would then become, if you touch both, the cookies would then become a Shein L'tuma. Okay? I didn't see him touch either one. Jordan said. Well, on the one hand, on the other hand. Jordan said. Any thoughts? Safek d'oraisa. Okay. Safek d'oraisa, good. Safek d'oraisa, excellent. Safek d'oraisa might not apply here, but even if it does, Safek d'oraisa means I don't know what the facts are and therefore I'll be mafka. But the question is, can we determine what the facts are? Now, we have a series of tools in Taurus HaSfekas. So if none of the tools work, that we have not figured out what the facts are, and we remain with the suffix, and then we say, so for Rez Lachurma, so for Barla Kula, and so forth. Yeah.
We have any proof?
Ah, do we have any proof? So we have no proof. We might have proof that he touched the cookies, especially if there's a suspicion. If I was in the room 10 minutes ago and everything was clean, and now there's a child with an impish grin and a trail of cookie crumbs, so it sounds like the young man or young woman touched the cookies. But do I know they touch the mouse? And they don't touch the mouse first? No. I don't know anything. I don't even know they touch the cookies. How do I even know they touch the cookies? Did you see it? Is there an eight? Is there a star? How do you know he touched the cookies?
Trail of crumbs. So what does the trail of crumbs tell you?
Maybe it was the Nile, but we all saw it to it. You're scared to say, but probably the kid touched it. I can't prove it, but chances are he touched it.
We actually have that's not something you have to be embarrassed to talk about. That's actually something we're going to dive into the world of Rove very, very soon. Given this data set, chances are, if I find cookies and I find a trail of crumbs and I find a child, so what are the chances that he did touch the cookies and what are the chances he did not touch the cookies? So I would say probably 90-95% chances that, in 90-95% of the time, you'll find this set of data. What happened is that he touched the cookies. So that's probability, statistics. That's how long it recognizes that. We're going to be seeing that inside the satin tool in a moment. That's what we call Rove. I have come across Rove in another situation. Some of you probably came across Rove last year on the first Amud of Maseches Sukkah. This is so a different type of Rove. This is a statistical Rove. Chances are, looking at the evidence I do have, chances are, here's what happened, the part of the story that I didn't see. Okay, and how about the mouse? Did you touch the mouse? And now you're quick to answer that question. What would you say about whether I touched the mouse?
Probably,
right? I told you, we're talking about a time in history when kids tend to like touching dead mice, which again, could be they still like touch dead mice, but they've already been trained not to, as the case may be. So then I have a role that the child touched the cookies. I have a role that the child touched mouse. So it sounds pretty solid. So we know when there's a question on the hand of sequence. Let me push it farther. Let's say I find the kid, I come back and his hand is in the bowl of chocolate chip cookie dough. Caught red-handed, almost literally. Right, so I know that he's touching it. Now, I don't know now. And the rogue tells me, I left the kid alone for a while, there's a dead mouse there, and chances are, 2-to-1 chances that he touched it, there's a dead mouse to touch, he touched it. The chances are that he's coming, and now he's touching the dough is coming. Okay, so the dough is coming. Is there any out? Any counter argument?
You don't know that he touched the
mouse. I know for sure he touched the mouse, okay, good. So if rogue is not acceptable, so then rogue is not acceptable. By definition, rove always means there's a need. So, by definition, if you accept rove, that means that we'll give credence to rove and to a certain extent ignore the need. Right? Yeah?
Could we ask the child if he touched the mouse and believe him if he said no?
That's a good question. Can he be an aid? Can you cut him being an aid? Somewhat questionable. But we could simplify things even further by talking about Embo Das Lisha. He's not even so communicative. He's not 4. We're talking about a 1.5-year-old. 1.5-year-old is pretty precocious. He managed to get to the cookies. Okay. But there's a will, there's a way. And he, if he could have gotten the cookies, he could have gotten the mess. Yeah, what do you say? It's interesting, Sara. I'm not sure that the sensibilities. This is before germs existed. I met someone a couple years ago. I was in their house for a while, and they noticed they did not have any soap at the sinks. And at the kitchen sink, they had detergent for the dishes, but there's no hand soap anywhere. My high. They said, "We don't believe in germs." They're misapplying the warm stuff. I'm going to a couple of I'm not sure it works for Zucca, so I don't think it works for germs. But yeah, this is before germs were invented, back in the day. I'm not sure that people necessarily. But the interesting part, yeah?
Oh,
Okay, good. To your point again, it could be that the fact that you're touching the dough, maybe that it'll be most to touch the mouse and then the dough. And the fact you're touching the dough is a riot, didn't touch the mouse. And that creates its own little rule. Or maybe you have to look at Karu, which is a Gemara in the second parak of Bava Basra.
There's a larger way of thinking about it, and I'm not going to answer right now. But there's another, a whole other tool, just like there's a, one of the tools of Torah Sasekis is Shnei Edim, Eid Echad, another tool is Shtar, another tool is Rov. There are other tools as well. As a matter of fact, specifically, there's another tool that's available in this case, a tool which, the tool of Rov indicates that the cookies are tummy. But there is another tool we could have used that would argue that the dough is tahar. And we're going to head to the Beis Medrash in just a moment. We're going to dive into Mar Makomos for you. We're going to dive into... First, Mar Makomos are going to introduce us to two major tools in the world of the Torah Sasvekas. Rov is one of them. And we're going to learn about each one separately. And then we're going to see how they interact with each other and how they play out for better or for worse in different cases. We're going to try to come to an understanding of what's driving each one, hopefully guided perhaps by Rav Shimon Shkap at some point, to begin to understand what's driving each one. It's going to begin to give us a lot of insight that will hopefully break open the whole world of Torah Sasvekas. Once we have some more perspective, the next set of Mar Makomos, which is probably coming your way next week, we're going to move from Torah Sasvekas in general into specifically Safek Mamon. When we get to Safek Mamon, that's where we're going to get to the sugya of Bava Kama, Daf, Mem Vav, Amen Aleph.